All right, today's episode is all about preparation for the test relating to Chapter 10, the Early Republic. I just want to provide you guys with some quick review over some of the big things that you see sort of within that test, but also, again, kind of an overview of that chapter. So it is the Early Republic, 1789 to 1828. America's a new nation. George Washington is now our first president. We've come through the Articles of Confederation, this period of after the Revolution's over and a little bit during the Revolution. We've come through that period, and we now need a stronger government. George Washington, as the first president, will help set that course. One of the things that occurs is we have the two political parties. We have the Federalists and the Democratic Republicans. One of the things that happens is George Washington, as president, greatly dislikes political parties. And he's very concerned that the political parties will create lots of problems for the country. So we know that Washington tries to avoid some of those issues. But he himself can't quite stay out of that completely. It's just not entirely possible. So, shifting from that, we also talk about his cabinet and the precedents that he set. We talk about one of those cabinet guys is very important. That's Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton's the guy who's the Secretary of the Treasury, and he sets the country's financial plan in place. Quick review of that: repay the national debt, number one. Number two, create a national bank. We need a good bank to help lend, and that will provide stability. Create a national bank. The third part was the whiskey tax. We talked about how that led to the Whiskey Rebellion, because this nation of farmers, farmersonly.com America of the 1780s, 90s, and so on, they're upset by this. And then point four was his protective tariff, which was intended to help early American industry survive against much tougher European industry. And it would provide some tax money for the government. And so it's that protective tariff. And those were the 4 points of Hamilton's economic plan. Back to the political parties. We have the Federalists, Hamilton, John Adams, to some extent George Washington. Then you have the Democratic Republicans, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison. Big issue where they separate is Federalists want a strong central government, whereas the Democratic Republicans want stronger state governments. On the Constitution, the Federalists, wanting that strong central government, will interpret the Constitution in a way that we call loose construction. And by loose, we mean that they look at the Constitution and they look to increase the power of the federal government by interpreting it loosely. If it doesn't say you can't, go ahead and do it. And so loose, they're very, let's play fast and loose with the Constitution. And if it doesn't tell us we can't, well, then let's go ahead and do it. The Democratic Republicans, on the other side, are much more concerned that if it doesn't tell you that you can do it, that you just can't do it if it doesn't tell you that you can. And so Democratic Republicans like Thomas Jefferson will later have an issue with the Louisiana Purchase because they don't know if they can. Thomas Jefferson sort of violates his own ideas. And he's going to go ahead and buy the land because it's 3 cents an acre and it's just too good a deal to pass up. But he wasn't really being faithful to his idea about loose construction. Another point here that has to be made is the Federalists are pro-British, whereas the Democratic Republicans are pro-French. We still have an alliance with France. The French Revolution is going on, and it sets up all the problems for our first four presidents that's going to create... will be neutral under George Washington. He'll leave office in his farewell speech saying, hey, avoid entangling alliances, remain neutral. But every president tries to keep us out. We have the Embargo Act. We have John Adams getting super sensitive in his term with the Alien and Sedition Acts. We have all these problems that with France and Britain that keep spilling over. So by the time of our fourth president, James Madison... the British, who are now becoming our main problem, we just go ahead and declare war in 1812. because we've had enough. They're kidnapping our sailors, encouraging Indian attacks. They're taking our ships. Enough's enough. We declare war in 1812 on the British. Second Battle of Independence, Second Revolution, and we fight it. Nobody really wins. But all these problems, four presidents, and they sort of result in this War of 1812 that's sort of a stalemate, sort of a tie. We come out of that. The battle at New Orleans is our big victory, even though it takes place a month after the war is over. Andrew Jackson, importantly, becomes the hero, and he'll ride that into the presidency, as we'll later see. Coming back to this theme, though, as we get away from that war and the foreign policy issues of the day, the issues at home were all about a nation that is a nation of farmers transitioning. It's starting that slow transition of industrializing to become the nation that we know of today, that produces all these things where people live in cities and we have factories, etc. It's beginning that process. And as we move from that agrarian society, that agriculture society of the farms, towards the Industrial Revolution, we have guys like Eli Whitney with interchangeable parts that makes factories work and work efficiently. And they begin to pop up in cities, and cities begin to slowly grow. Additionally, you have the birth of new transportation systems. Most roads are dirt roads. They're not very efficient. If farmers have to transport their goods, they're going to do it by water. And a lot of times the water, the rivers aren't in the right places to efficiently transport the goods, which leads to the idea of the birth of canals. And it's going to be canals like the Erie Canal in upstate New York that will literally link New York City and the Hudson River and then cut it over and across New York State. And you'll be able to move a ship up the elevation, up as it rises and falls, and then you'll be able to exit that ship out onto the Great Lakes. And by connecting those two, it is a tremendous, tremendous force for economic expansion. Meanwhile, as canals are really helping to take off and continue that expansion of moving goods cheaply, efficiently down rivers, these new created rivers that are canals, we also have the birth of something called the steamboat. And some of the first steamboats are going to be prone to explosion, but the obvious advantage of a steamboat is you could go against the tide, you could go against the current more easily. And so steamboats allow you to just go straight up the Mississippi. You don't have to go one way. So this was a very powerful change, and it allowed you to use the Mississippi in ways you couldn't use it before. So this is going to be one of the big changes that is created. Now, several other things before we close. We are entering, after the War of 1812, we feel like we've defeated the British, even though it was a stalemate. We call this the era of good feelings. The Federalists sort of fall away as a party, and the Democratic Republicans are kind of the sole party. And under this time period, under James Monroe, you have a country that is united in sort of one party. And it's a time of peace, economic expansion, things feel good, and we call it the era of good feelings. So this time period, of course, is not going to last, but it's a nice little window, of time where things go really well for the country. Several major court cases, Marbury versus Madison, says the Constitution, and the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution, and that raises the power of the Supreme Court. Justice John Marshall is a very important guy, of course, because he helps preside over this sort of expansion of the federal judicial system over the state level. Gibbons versus Ogden is another one of these cases where the federal courts get to regulate state trade. And our final two points before this concludes, one, the Missouri Compromise of 1820, and what this will accomplish is we're starting to see cotton explode. The cotton gin, and Eli Whitney, that same guy who did interchangeable parts, also creates the cotton gin. Cotton gin causes slavery to explode, and with the cotton gin causing slavery to rise, we begin to start to see this new sectionalism pop up. The South is becoming more separated from the North and more about slavery and cotton. And the Missouri Compromise allows Missouri in as a slave state while bringing in Maine as a free state. The Monroe Doctrine. Meanwhile, the Monroe Doctrine essentially is James Monroe's presidency, and we're looking out telling Europe to stay in Europe. We will give them their space, and they need to give us ours, and they need to quit messing around in our hemisphere. So good luck on the test. Direct message me if you have a question or send me an email. Thanks for listening.